It is the Lake Show. Steve in for Henry. I'll be back tomorrow on a Saturday between 3 and 6. We'll have Tech Talk with Doug. We'll go outdoors with Steve Kearney. We'll keep you up to date on the Wild, the Timberwolves. And before you know it, we're going to be in the month of February tomorrow. And before you know it, pitchers and catchers report to spring training in Arizona and Florida. We'll talk a little MLB on the show on Saturday as well. Chris Tubbs is our producer on the show tonight. Right now we're pleased to be joined by Stephen Clark. He covers space flight for Ars Technica. Stephen, good to visit with you.
Of course. Good to be with you, Steve.
Yeah, a lot going on. Let's start with the biggie. President Trump and Elon Musk are close allies. And President Trump talked about bringing those two astronauts home. They're already booked to come home on a Dragon capsule at some point here late this winter, early this spring. Tell us a little bit more about the story, because it is curious. People are kind of wondering, you know, they're stranded, and why haven't they been able to come home? I mean, there's a lot of moving parts here.
Yes, there are. And, you know, NASA and SpaceX already have the agreement, like you said, in place since last August to bring Butch Wilmore and Sonny Williams, who, you know, have been on the space station for, 8 or 9 months now, since last June, and to bring them home in late March or early April. And that's been the plan since last August. And SpaceX, NASA decided that they wanted to keep the astronauts on board the ISS because if they brought them home earlier, they would do two things. They would have to pay SpaceX for an additional flight, which obviously SpaceX is more cost effective than many other rocket companies, but that's still sure. $200 million probably in taxpayer money. And secondly, it would disrupt the space station's schedule and all the science and stuff they're doing on board. So they wanted to keep these two astronauts on board the space station until there was a convenient time to bring them home, and that turned out to be March of this year. As for the statement that Elon Musk and President Trump made on social media, I've not heard any comments from them outside of those social media posts, and no mentions of it since then. It's hard to read what that means, because technically it could be feasible to bring them home before late March. They have a ride. They're not stranded on the space station, despite the word that Elon Musk and President Trump used in their social media posts. They have a ride home right now, and they could come home with their two other crewmates, four people. But that would leave the space station with a crew of just three people. So it would be thinly staffed. It would be two Russians and one American, so only one American on board the International Space Station for a couple of months. And this would throw the entire science schedule and maintenance schedule on the space station into disarray until new crew members arrive, perhaps at the end of March or sometime in April. So not a good idea, in my opinion, and I don't really think it's realistic. It's hard to know what the motive was for those posts other than politics.
Yeah, and when you look at the operations of the space station, there's a lot of debate on how much longer that facility will be in service. Number one, there's a politics associated with Russia and the United States. There are other nations and astronauts from other nations that go to the facility and do work, etc. But and then beyond that is, you know, continuing to fund that and what's next. I mean, there's a lot going on there. And then it also brings Boeing and Starliner. We haven't heard a lot about Boeing and Starliner and what's next, because they were supposed to be the competitor to SpaceX and the Dragon capsule to ferry astronauts and cargo and equipment up to the International Space Station. So that's part of the story as well.
Yeah, yes, it is. And before I talk about the future, one other thing I wanted to mention, forgot to mention a minute ago, about these social media posts is Elon Musk in his post said that he'd agree with President Trump to bring the astronauts home as soon as possible. The statement we got from NASA officially the next day said as soon as practical. So two different words used, and for me, practical means as scheduled at the end of March, and that's what I suspect will be the case in the end. So the as for the future, the International Space Station right now, you know, it's the oldest modules that have been up there since 1998. It was the assembly was completed in 2011, so all the hardware, all the major elements are between, 13, 14 years old and 27 years old at this point. So they were originally only designed for 15 years, each element. And they've recertified some of the older elements to last until at least 2030. And that's the currently scheduled retirement date for 2030. And at that point, the plan is to deorbit the space station and likely will be reentering over the ocean. It'll be a controlled reentry. SpaceX actually has the contract to handle that as well, to guide the reentry with one of their spacecraft. And it will largely burn up, although some debris will reach the ocean out in the South Pacific. And that will be the end of the ISS, $100 billion a space station, a vehicle that has been really the centerpiece of the entire U.S. human spaceflight program for a quarter century. And there's no plan at NASA currently to replace it. They do have some contracts with some commercial companies, including Blue Origin, Jeff Bezos' company, to potentially develop a smaller, more cost-effective space station in low Earth orbit. This is what we're talking about, a couple hundred miles above the Earth, to maintain that U.S. presence in low Earth orbit, because when the ISS is deorbited, likely the only space station that's going to be in orbit at that point is going to be a Chinese space station. And for geopolitical reasons, I don't think that's very palatable to any administration, much less the Trump administration.
Yeah, and that brings up, you know, what's next. And I would assume as we move forward, we're not even 2 weeks into the new administration, and we already spoke about Elon Musk and his influence, and it seems as though he has President Trump's ear fairly regularly. That would the overall strategy change? Is it we need a new orbiting platform? We need to do this. We ultimately need to send Americans to Mars. I mean, there's so much going on, particularly with the Space Launch System and the Artemis program. There's news there, and it's very expensive, and it's not reusable. I don't even know what direction to go in here, but I think, Stephen, from your seat, it is stay tuned. Things could change a lot in 2025.
Yes. Yes, for sure. This is going to be a very big year for space news. There are going to be a lot of changes, suspect, and a lot of new money probably flowing in from the private sector and the government into space, both on the civilian side with NASA, and also I'm expecting a big increase in the funding for the Space Force this year as well on the military side. So in terms of Artemis, right now they're stacking the Space Launch System, this, you know, giant expendable rocket, in contrast to SpaceX's reusable vehicles in Florida, to launch two or four people around the far side of the moon in, about a year and a half from now, a little less than a year and a half from now, potentially. And that is continuing. In the back of my mind, the last couple of weeks, since the inauguration, I've been checking on the status of that. You know, has there been a stop work order from the top? You know, we've seen the White House step into agencies and make very specific decisions for the agencies that the agency leaders usually make themselves. And so far that has not happened. They're still stacking the Space Launch System. So we'll see what happens going forward, because there's a lot of discussion among the space community that program will be canceled, the Space Launch System. And so we'll see. I'm interested to know also when the federal budget is going to be released, probably in a couple of months' time, the budget request from the Trump administration. I think around that time we may be hearing a lot about some more detail about what the vision is, because you're right. He mentioned going to Mars. The president mentioned going to Mars in his inaugural address. NASA has the program to go to the moon, which is and much more realistic, you know, to happen in this decade than going to Mars, in my opinion. And then there's the the space station in low Earth orbit, the International Space Station, which costs $2 or $3 billion a year to run, just from the U.S. government, not to mention the international partners, and that is going to have to be decommissioned at some point. And what replaces that? And all these decisions need to be made very soon. There are a lot of factors at play in all these areas.
Yeah, and there's a lot of huge players. There's established long-time defense contractors in the space business. We talked about Boeing and Starliner and all the problems Boeing has had with jetliners and the 737 MAX, and then Starliner. They weren't able to bring those two astronauts home. So there's that. But there are big, established defense contractors, aerospace companies involved. And then, of course, you have SpaceX and Elon Musk, and you have Jeff Bezos and Blue Origin and the new Glenn rocket took there. I mean, there is a lot of people that want a piece of the action here, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. And I suspect the latter group, the entrepreneurial-minded space companies, are going to come out on top, at least when it comes to NASA, because obviously Elon Musk has Donald Trump's ear. But even not that notwithstanding, SpaceX is already NASA's largest contractor. They have more contracts by value than any other company, including Boeing and Lockheed Martin and some of the old, you know, established aerospace companies that have been around, yep, you know, since World War II or before. And so no surprise there. And we saw Blue Origin, Jeff Bezos' company, successfully launch their first New Glenn heavy lift rocket a few weeks ago. That was a very, very big moment for Blue Origin, and I think positions Bezos' company to be a big player going forward as well.
Yeah, and when we come back, I want to talk more about where Starship stands, because Starship was able to return their super heavy booster back to the launch pad. It was very cool, but the upper stage or ship apparently exploded on its way around the Earth, didn't quite accomplish its mission. And the question becomes, when will that happen again? And then ultimately, what else is going on? And we've got to bring up, you know, a huge player as well, and what could fuel a lot of money from the U.S. government, and that is what China is doing in space, their plans for the moon and beyond. So we'll try and squeeze it all in a moment. Stephen Clark joining us from Ars Technica on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline here on a Friday night. News Talk 830-WCCO. It is the Lake Show. Steve in for Henry tonight. Chris Tubbs, our producer, and we're pleased to be joined by Stephen Clark from Ars Technica. He covers space flight. The sixth test flight of Starship, everything appeared to go well. The booster came back, the super heavy booster, and they were able to catch it back at the launch. It really is extraordinary. No matter what you think about Elon Musk or so on and so forth, the engineering, the ingenuity, it is a marvel.
It is remarkable to see, and it's happened twice now, and they're actually two for two when they've attempted the catch. There was one a divert, but they diverted before they even got close to the launch pad due to a problem. So once it's come down to the tower and is within reach of those arms, it's been caught two times successfully. And you know, this rocket is as big as a fuseline of a Boeing 747 jumbo jet, and it is 30 feet wide. The booster itself, the super heavy, is 230 feet tall, approximately. And it's just remarkable to see that big vehicle, that big structure coming back, and the engine bay glowing red hot from the heat of the reentry as it's falling back, literally falling, free falling down back to the launch pad until they do the landing burn. And that the success they've had so far with that, I think, bodes really well for getting that part of the Starship story right. There's a lot more to do. We can talk about that in a minute, but certainly really impressive.
Yeah, it really is extraordinary technology and opens a lot of doors. And we've discussed that about being able to get huge payloads into orbit. And if you talk about building a new space station or making it more accessible and then traveling once again to the moon or beyond Mars at some point, we certainly don't have time to get into some of the challenges associated with getting human beings to Mars and bringing them back successfully to Earth. I don't think that's been completely thought through, but for another show. In this case, though, so the booster and all those Raptor engines, it's the upper stage or ship that shortly after separating and after the Super Heavy booster landed back on the Gulf Coast, they ran into a problem. And this just goes to show how difficult all of this is and how incredibly dangerous it is.
Yes. This was, I think, probably the biggest setback that they've had with Starship so far. They've had, you know, explosions, accidents, spectacular, quote-unquote failures, but learning lessons, really. And each flight has gotten farther into the mission than the one before until this one. And so we saw the upper stage or ship appear to explode over the ocean, kind of between Florida Keys and Cuba, essentially. And it rained debris. Some of your listeners probably saw the video online or on television.
For sure.
It looked like a fireworks display gone wrong. The debris streaming across the sky, fiery pieces of the Starship coming up over the Turks and Caicos Islands and then out into the Atlantic Ocean. And some debris was actually recovered on the Turks and Caicos Islands, some small debris. Thankfully, no one was hurt. But certainly, I think that's, you know, going to, you know, cause SpaceX to, you know, they're obviously doing an investigation and need to figure out what went wrong there. But it may also raise questions about, you know, this, the debris also caused the FAA to divert several dozen flights that were in that area, kind of between the Bahamas and Puerto Rico and Bermuda. And some of them had to divert to other airports, return to their home airport. These are commercial passenger flights. So it may cause the FAA to reevaluate, you know, where they have flight restrictions for these launches and what, you know, what requirements they may levy for trajectories and things like that. So it's not passing over any island, especially in this early test phase. You know, I think once Starship is as reliable as, you know, SpaceX's Falcon 9 rocket, you know, they may not need those restrictions. But I think it raises a lot of questions.
Yeah, and that gets back to the incoming administration, who hasn't been in place for 2 weeks yet. At what point in time, what kind of latitude ultimately they give SpaceX? Because to meet some of these goals that NASA has on returning astronauts, returning Americans to the moon, they are going to need Starship and the Super Heavy booster and the upper stage ship to accomplish those goals. So there's definitely a tug there in how they sort that out, because they had a very ambitious schedule plan for this year.
Yes, they could launch as many as 25 times this year, and I think they have a shot maybe of realistically maybe getting half of that. I think that would be a big year if they can get a dozen flights in this year, but definitely want to ramp up the flight rate. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch and see what the Trump administration does with the FAA, with the, specifically the Space Office of the FAA, which, you know, by charter is supposed to be regulating for public safety. That's third party public, people that aren't involved in the launch, you know, something falling on an island or a town, and property damage. And they require launch companies to hold a certain amount of insurance to cover, you know, claims for property damage if something falls on property downrange. That's the two. Those are the two big things that the Commercial Spaceflight Office at the FAA are responsible for. And you know, we've heard the FAA after this. You know, this launch was January the 16th that we're talking about, 4 days before the inauguration. So it's still under Biden. The FAA required an investigation. SpaceX will lead the investigation. That's the way these things have always gone. But the FAA wants to see the results of the investigation, and then before they put a stamp or approve a license to launch the next flight. And I've been checking in with the FAA pretty regularly and just talked to someone at the FAA today, and that stance has not changed over the last 11 days since the inauguration. So they're still requiring that investigation, and I think the optics of this are somewhat different than some of the issues that SpaceX had with the FAA last year, which were primarily around environmental issues. But seeing that debris falling, over an island, near cruise ships, diverting several dozen flights, I think it's kind of a different animal.
Yeah, any sense whatsoever on when they could fly again? Because I would assume, considering what they've done down in Boca Chica, they are ready to fly. There's plenty of hardware ready to go.
Yeah. Just some news today. SpaceX filed had a filing with the Federal Communications Commission for approval to operate some of the radios and telemetry transmitters they have on the rocket. And in that filing, they suggest a launch date no earlier than February 24th. So, that's 24 days from now. And those dates have slipped, been delayed slightly in the past. But once those licenses for the FCC go out, this is not the FAA. This is a different regulatory body. We've often seen that, these dates end up being pretty realistic. They end up launching within a week or two of those dates. So I would say we're maybe a month away from the next Starship flight. And, SpaceX is going to be ready. I think the FAA is probably going to be ready under this new administration. And even late last year, we saw the FAA moving a lot faster than they had been earlier in the year. So pretty optimistic we'll see another Starship no later than March, but we'll see.
Yeah, the only other thing I wanted to bring up, and maybe it's a tease for a future visit, and that is to talk about in the 60s, late 50s, Cold War, into the 60s, that rivalry between the United States and the Soviet Union fueled the space race and ultimately led to Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin stepping on the moon in July of 1969. History is very clear. That rivalry fueled the space race. China's very aggressive. The way things are trending, they may have the only operating space station in the early 2030s if things continue to trend the way they are. They are being very aggressive. They have been to the far side of the moon. They want to put people on the moon. I would assume they have goals of getting to Mars as well. That could be the fuel for a new space race, this rivalry between China and the United States.
Yeah, you're exactly right. That competition had fueled the space race, as you said. And, I think a lot of people don't want to say it in the U.S. government, but I think it's clear that there's another space race going on now. And it's all the things you mentioned, returning to the moon, and the space station in low Earth orbit, but it's also other things. We've seen in the last few months, Chinese companies, state-owned companies, begin launching satellites for their version of Starlink, and they've launched several dozen of those satellites right now, launching them in groups, just like SpaceX does, and plans to launch hundreds, actually a couple thousand of them, over the next couple of years. So that's going to be a big capability that China is going to have and has significant military utility, as we've seen Starlink being used by the U.S. military and also by the Ukrainians in the war with Russia. And that's going to be something to watch as well. And China also has multiple groups efforting toward a reusable rocket like SpaceX's Falcon 9. And there's even a concept that was unveiled last year at a Chinese air show of something that looks just like Starship, actually, and a fully reusable rocket like SpaceX is working on. So they have very, very high ambitions in the communication internet realm, like Starlink, reusable rockets, going to the moon, and so on.
2025 will be very interesting. And as we talked about earlier in the show, the future of the space launch system, just to close it out, it sounds as though there's a no later than spring of 2026 for the next test flight. Do you think that's feasible to meet that goal based on what we know, concerns about the heat shield, et cetera?
I'm going to give you a very unsatisfying answer, which is I don't know. My inclination is to say yes, because that's still over a year away. And if you just look at the volume of work that needs to be done, processing to get the vehicles ready, the capsule and the rocket, you'd think, yeah, that's enough time. But we haven't seen anything happen on time with the Space Launch System. So, you know, I have two competing thoughts. You know, somebody's talking to me from each shoulder here. I don't know how to answer that. So right. I would not put money on April 2026 for Artemis II. And, you know, even when they get the thing to the launch pad, there may be delays, scrubs, you know. Artemis I, the first uncrewed flight of the SLS, was ready to go, but ended up getting delayed 3 or 4 months there at the end because of issues they found on the launch pad during fueling. And, you know, gremlins or bugs pop up at the very end and you know, throw the whole thing off course. So we'll see. That's my answer.
Yeah. All right. Well, Stephen, always good to visit with you. Thanks so much for all the time tonight, and hopefully we can visit again soon.
I hope so. It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Stephen Clark, Ars Technica, covers space flight, joined us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker hotline. I know we're late to the weather. We'll get an update on the weather in a moment. Maybe a little snow tomorrow. And then it looks like a cool down. We'll have that weather in a moment here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. Has it hit you yet? Has it really sunk in? There is no pro football this weekend. What am I supposed to do? Am I going to have to sort the sock drawer? I'm not sure. This is that. Now I know the big game is a week from Sunday down in New Orleans, and everyone's bummed about Philly and Kansas City. I'm not particularly bummed about Kansas City because Patrick Mahomes is still week in, week out, if the Vikes aren't playing, my favorite player to watch. And they're on all the time, but he plays with a joy and a pizzazz and a skill. It's hard to argue. So I'm not. Did I want to see Bills Commanders? Yes, that was my first choice. Beyond that, I would prefer to see Kansas City Commanders. The Eagles were my last choice. The behavior of their fans and what we've learned about their fans at the link and so on and so forth, it's just hard to root for the football team. But it gets back to Chris Tubbs. Have you wrapped your arms around the there is no football this weekend for the first time since I don't know when, summer?
But if you want to be entertained... If you really want to be entertained,
watch hockey, watch hoops,
duck, dive, dip, dodge, and duck. Right? Yeah. Okay. Did you see if this will make you happy? Did you see the Lions safety get hit in the ding dong during the dodgeball game?
No, I didn't.
Yes,
I haven't watched any of that. I've never been a Pro Bowl guy when it used to be AFC, NFC.
I love that old
play
Pro
out
Bowl
in Hawaii. I always hated the Pro Bowl.
I loved it.
Because I always felt like this isn't real football. They're not playing it at full speed. And that leads me back to the argument. The smartest thing they ever did was get rid of it. The NHL and their 3-on-3, it's okay. The NBA game, total joke. Nobody guards anybody. It's just ridiculous. Guys play more D at the Y than they play in that game. The only All-Star game, and I'll just go down this rabbit hole for a moment, that's even close to the real thing is the MLB All-Star game. Pitchers can pitch, hitters can hit, fielders can field. all the other ones. So, yeah, the Pro Bowl festivities, I want no part of it.
I would have loved to have gone to the Pro Bowl when it was in Honolulu, just to go out and watch football and have it so casual. And, yeah, I mean, we know, you know, I remember watching when Chris Warren was a running back for Seattle and he ran for like 900 yards in a game. It was great. I didn't like it when they moved it to Orlando and, you know, then they tried to, you know, kind of make it a little funky there. And I haven't watched the Pro Bowl games, admittedly, but when I saw Lion safety Brian Branch get hit in the ding-dong from Joe Mixon, I mean, it just made me smile. Like, I don't know. I found it funny.
But isn't it kind of a bummer? It's like, I know the big game is a week from Sunday down in New Orleans, at whatever they call the Superdome these days. Caesar's Superdome, I think it is. Before that, Mercedes-Benz had the sponsorship. But, and I brought that up to my wife, and she got this grin on her face that, like, she was mocking me, where I said, yeah, there's no football this weekend. And it was, oh, that's too bad, isn't it? Because she hates football.
Well,
hates football.
But see, my wife tolerates it. I mean, she tolerates it because I enjoy it. Yeah, I don't know.
My wife doesn't tolerate it. I mean, she makes no bones about it. I hate football, and I can hardly wait till it's over. Now, when it comes to the big game, she always watches a halftime show, and the spots. But see, the thing is, and we've talked about this. I know we have. In the lead up to the big game, all the Super Bowl ads are out there that the ad agencies and the people that paid for them just can't help themselves.
Thank you.
And they got to leak them out there. And I think that's such a bummer.
It's a buzzkill because some of us,
for sure,
we don't want spoilers. Like, what is the point of looking forward to a Super Bowl ad when we already know what it is? Like, if I want to, you know, I mean, one of the best best ads that I can ever remember was a Best Buy ad. I can't remember the Super Bowl, but it had Ozzy Osbourne in it, and he was doing his little Ozzy thing. And I love Ozzy.
Yeah, sure.
Black Sabbath. Ozzy
bit.
I mean, Ozzy's a legend. And then at the end, it's like, so Justin Bieber is in it. And he turns around. Ozzy looks at the camera. He's like, "What's a Bieber?" And it's like, "Oh, that's so good." I mean, stuff like that would be, it would be spoiled. And yeah. I just, to me, it takes the casual fan that's going to watch the game. You're going to watch it, for the ads. You're not going to watch it for the game. Like, I don't care that Tom Brady's doing the game. I'm not listening to the audio anyway. Like, Tom Brady's not going to say anything except, you know, of substance. But the casual fans, they want to see it. And if we already know it, then it's like, why am I going to sit there and watch for it when I can go online and, you know, not spend 3.5 hours? I can just spend, you know, 30 seconds.
Yeah, and I think social media and the fact that they can't help themselves by teasing and then saying, well, let's put it out there. Here's the Super Bowl ad. We spent all this money. I wish there was kind of the magic of unveiling. And I feel bad about that. And then no matter what, when it comes to the big game a week from Sunday, that everyone's going to say, well, the best Super Bowl halftime performance ever is Prince in the Rain in Miami, or it was U2 at the Super Bowl, or it was this or that. You know, and it's that gets old as well. We all love Prince. I get it. He's from here. It was a great performance.
But it's Purple Rain in the Rain, Steve. Like, it was...
Well, and after 9/11, you had U2 in the Super Bowl and the scrolling of the name. Very powerful. There's been a lot of great Super Bowl performances. But what I will say is that when someone does a reasonably good job, it's like sport now to rip the halftime entertainment, no matter what.
Yes, absolutely.
That's also kind of a bummer. But I will go back to my original premise. There's no football this weekend, Chris. There's no college football. There's no pro football. for the first time since August. And believe me, preseason doesn't count. I could care less about preseason football. So you get some college games that count in late August. High schools get started, and I'm a big high school football fan. And then the pro game starts in September. So here we are.
But let me say that it's the end of the football season. Do you have Netflix?
I do.
Okay. Well, tomorrow starts the road to WrestleMania. It's the Royal Rumble. Okay? I mean, you're sitting here saying this is the worst weekend of all time. The road to WrestleMania starts tomorrow.
Yeah.
Now, I'd be a lot more excited if that road went to US Bank Stadium. Thank you, WWE, for screwing us out of it and giving it to Las Vegas. But nonetheless, I regress. Yes, it's a Royal Rumble. I mean, it's going to be fun.
Now, granted.
Join me.
And I will say this. Early in the football season, I have admitted this many, many times. Early in the football season, if the weather's good, I'd much rather go on a long bike ride on my e-bike. I know I cheat. I'd rather do that and then listen to the game and not sit in the house on a nice autumn day.
Yeah, I bet you.
But
feel
there's still
out.
Football. You know what I'm saying? So now it's just filling that void. And then on Sunday night, there's a rhythm to Sunday night. We have a little dinner, and then my wife will go do her thing, and our youngest daughter will go do her thing. And then I just kind of settle in with Sunday night football, and it's kind of a great way to wind down the weekend and watch a game. So you're saying on Netflix I'm going to watch the road to WrestleMania.
Yeah, the Royal Rumble tomorrow night. Yep, it's from Indianapolis, and by the way, we're the best Apple-less, but you know, be that as it may, yeah, do that. And before we take our break, I kind of get the sense that where you're talking about, yeah, you know, I'm on my e-bike and I'm listening to the game and I'm not watching, but now you're feeling sad that there's no football to watch. It sounds like you're kind of disappointed that you exercised. This is why you don't exercise. You're going to miss out on football.
No. Maybe that's what I should do. Maybe that's what I should do is figure out how I'm going to get some quality exercise. That's it. I think that's it.
That's your project.
Maybe I should go for a walk, or go somewhere and work out. Yeah.
Keep YouTube TV in front of you though. Keep it on your phone so you can watch Red Zone.
Yeah, there you go. All right, quick break. We'll come back. Put a bow on it in a moment here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Timberwolves home Saturday night. Wizards in town. Timberwolves playing good ball. How about Luka Garza? Had a pretty nice night in the win over the Jazz. And All-Star Reserve, Anthony Edwards, Ant, had a good night. So the Timberwolves on an upswing once again. The lowly Wizards in Saturday night. They better take care of business against those guys. The Wild on the road there at Ottawa, then they close out the road trip at Boston. They are the best road team in the NHL. At 3M Arena at Marriott, Minnesota leading Wisconsin 3-2. Game one of the weekend series they'll play again tomorrow over at the U. Golden Gopher women taking on Ohio State at Ritter Arena this weekend. Women's basketball, they got beat by number 4 USC Thursday night. They take on number 1 UCLA this weekend out in L.A. That is a tough road trip. Number 4 and then number 1 for the Golden Gopher women. Did you see the story at our website on the Van Gogh?
No, I didn't.
And this has been making the rounds. Yeah, Ari Bergeron did the story at our website. Is a painting bought at a Minnesota garage sale a real Van Gogh? The painting was purchased back in 2016 at a garage sale in Minnetonka for $50, and there is a thought that it could be a real painting by Vincent Van Gogh. We'll see about it. But it's one of those, somebody picked it up for $50, and And who knows? It could be worth millions.
That's a great business investment right there.
That is a good deal. I got to get me one of those. Hey, Chris, always good to visit with you.
You too, dude.
Take care, my friend. I'll be back tomorrow between 3 and 6. And most of all, thanks to you for tuning in, as always, here on News Talk 830-WCCO. We have all the news and weather at 9. And once again, we'll talk to you tomorrow.